Tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome Yogacharya Richard Peterson back to Many Rivers. I somehow have always been traveling out of town and have not heard him speak before, so this is my lucky night, finally. Three is a charm, I believe. Unfortunately, I have to announce that Swami Atmavidyananda could not make it today. There was an unfortunate circumstance that arose to prevent that, but we know that from all I've been told by some of the folks who've been to Richard's talks before here, that we are in good hands, and we welcome you back to Many Rivers. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Please close the eyes. I bow to God. I bow to my Gurudev, Paramahamsa Hariharananda. I bow to my Guruji, Paramahamsa Pragyananda. I bow to the lineage of Kriya Yoga Masters, Babaji Maharaj, Lahiri Mahasaya, Sri Yukteswar, Sanyal Mahasaya, Paramahamsa Yogananda, Swami Satyananda. I bow to the living power of God within you all. I'd like to begin the program, my talk this evening, with a prayer by the great yogi Swami Shivananda. O adorable Lord of mercy and love, salutations and prostrations unto thee. Thou art omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. Thou art Sat Chit Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss absolute. Thou art the indweller of all beings. O God, grant us an understanding heart, equal vision, balanced mind, faith, devotion, and wisdom. Give us inner spiritual strength to resist temptation and control the mind. Free us from egoism, lust, greed, hatred, anger, jealousy. Fill our hearts with noble virtues. O God, let us behold Thee in all these names and forms. Let us serve Thee in all these names and forms. Let us ever remember Thee. Let us ever sing Thy glory. Let Thy name be ever on our lips. Let us abide in Thee forever and ever. Om. Amen. Good evening. The topic of our time together tonight is Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga is a spiritual practice, a sadhana, that's based on two words, Kriya and Yoga. Yoga has many meanings, the first of which is discipline. In order to do anything, we need to know how to do it. We need to do it correctly, whether it's driving a car, cooking food, whatever it is. We need a process, a technique in how to do something. This is yoga. That's the first definition of yoga. The second is union. When I speak to you and you hear me, there's a union of ideas. When I look at you and you look at me, there's a union of eyes. But in a greater sense, the popular sense, yoga means the union of the body with the soul, individual soul, and then the individual soul with the cosmic universal soul. Another meaning of yoga is meditation. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he says that yoga is the cessation of the waves in the mind. The final meaning of meditation is samadhi. And samadhi is a state of concentration, achieved through concentration, where we transcend the mind and go beyond the mind. So this is yoga. Kriya is made up of two syllables, kri and ya. Kri means activity, work. Any work we are doing is any activity, kri, is done by ya. And ya is the power of God within us. The basic tenet is that we are not a body and mind that has a soul. We are a soul that has taken a body and has a mind. The mind is much older than the body. We actually have three bodies, yogic philosophy teaches: causal body, astral body, and physical body. The physical body, when we die, we will leave. Dust to dust, ashes to ashes. The astral body will be carried with the soul to the next planes of existence. Where those are, where they have names and theories, but we don't really dwell on that as much. So Kriya Yoga is, in essence, is perceiving divinity in all activities. Kriya Yoga is based on physiology, psychology, astrology, philosophy, and the direct experience of the realized masters. So I thought I would begin my talk with a little bit of the philosophical, theoretical background to the practice. This is the yogic philosophy. I will share this information with you. This is information that I've gotten from the direct teaching of my Gurudev, Paramahamsa Hariharananda, and my Guruji, Paramahamsa Pragyananda, through reading of their books and other books, and somewhat my realization of through my own practice, humble though that is it may be. So that's what I will share. Kriya Yoga and the philosophy is very beautiful. It starts for me and for others by answering the big questions of life. Who am I? Where am I? Where have I come from? Where am I going? And how am I going to get there? Hariharananda, in his book, Kriya Yoga, The Scientific Process of Soul Culture and the Essence of All Religions, begins from the beginning. He says, he teaches that God is absolute and non-dual. In the Kinya Upanishad, there's a beautiful saying that says, that which cannot be conceived by the mind, but by which the mind conceives, know that to be God and not what people worship. So we're not going to be able to realize God through the mind. God, by nature, transcends the mind. The mind is a tool of the soul, through which the soul experiences the material world. But what we do know, the attributes of God, as taught by the masters, is that God is, as said in the prayer, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, all-pervading, all-powerful, all-knowing. That the attributes of God are Sat, Chit, Ananda. That means existence, consciousness, and bliss absolute. God existed always in the past, in the present, in the future. God is all-knowing. God is ultimately is consciousness, pure consciousness, and existence consciousness is bliss, absolute bliss. So Baba writes, God is one, absolute and non-dual, means onto itself is complete. We say itself because to say him or her is to personify something that is beyond gender. God, by definition, is formless, absolute. But he teaches that God was one and he had the desire to be many. So from this absolute Brahman, he transformed, and I'll use the word he because that's rather than it, because that just sounds confusing. God was one and he decided to be many. He wished to be manifested into the many forms of the material universe. So from this absolute Brahman, he transformed himself into relative existence and manifested into all the names and forms of the physical world. Therefore, whatever we see, whatever we perceive, whatever has life or matter is none other than this one God manifesting in all these names and forms. In the Katha Upanishad, it is written that the indwelling being of all beings is this one absolute Brahman manifesting into all the various names and forms of existence. So who are we? We are, each of us, there's an interesting, to back up, Ramakrishna, the great saint of India, was asked, what is our relationship to God? And his answer is profound because it speaks to an evolution of our own awareness as taught by the scriptures. He says, when we consider ourselves as physical creatures, as a body and a mind, then God is the master or father, and we are his servants or children. This is something that we're very comfortable with. And when we use this language of God, we always talk about talking to God the Father, whatever, a personification of something that is outside us, beyond us. He says that's one level of awareness. When we consider ourselves to be an embodied soul, then God is the universal soul, and we are emanations of that one universal soul with the same attributes and characteristics. The analogy is the spark to the fire. The third aspect, he says, and this is the highest aspect, when we perceive and conceive ourselves as spirit, pure spirit, then we are one, identical with God. So you can see how there is an expansion of even of conception of the possibility of these different relationships with divinity. In essence, we are God. Hariharananda writes that this indwelling self, this one Brahman that has manifested into all these names and forms, is our essential nature. But, he says, this is not our direct experience. While we know it, while we can say it and speak the language, and this is truth as taught through the scriptures and as the direct realization of the realized masters, but this is not our experience. However, having said that, he said, human beings, because of our capacity of discrimination are the only beings that have the capacity to realize this truth. So who are we? We are spirit. We are ultimately God. We are on a, and where are we going? We're going on a journey. The transmigration of the soul. Harihananda writes that the soul, why we don't realize that is because of avidya or ignorance. We believe ourselves to be separate from God, and so live in a world, imagining ourselves to be different, so live in a world of plurality, imagining ourselves to be different, separate identities. That the divine nature of the soul needs to be awakened because we're trapped in bondage through illusion, delusion, and error, through the bondage of desire and objects of the material world. This delusion, illusion, and error is Maya. It's the play of God. Sai Baba teaches, he says that the whole thing, he says, you have to, quote him, he says, you have to realize that the whole thing is just a play. God has created, has given us a part to play. We are to play our part well. He said, he has created the play and he enjoys it. So this play, where does it start? In the book Kriya Yoga, Harihananda quotes Sri Aurobindo, who was a great saint of India. And this is a beautiful quote. He says, matter, the physical universe, is the self-expression of the absolute. The absolute, once again, this one pure consciousness that has playfully plunged itself into apparent sleep, this ignorance, in order to enjoy the delight of self-discovery as it ascends back to itself through the successive stages of evolution. That's a profound quote. As I said at the beginning, the scriptures teach that everything is God. There is no such thing as inanimate matter. Life is inherent in everything. From this pure consciousness, then transformed into super consciousness, which as I understand it is not a lower stage but a different stage, from super consciousness into life force, from life force into matter. Matter does not exist as it appears to us. It is the vibration of energy, which is the vibration of consciousness. So, everything, Harihananda, they teach, is permeated with God. God, when we say, is all-pervading. God is everywhere in everything. Ultimately, everything is God. So this life force, this journey, begins in the rocks. Actually, the stages of creation are interesting. From this formless absolute, the first stage of creation is space. From space comes air. From air comes fire or heat. So we have space, gas, heat, liquid, and then solid. How this consciousness has gone from more subtle to more grossified, eventually into the earth. But it's all consciousness. Quantum physics is it's really knocking on the door of giving us scientific proof of this phenomena that we speak of. This is hard science now, we are told. but that the building block of matter is the atom. An atom has a nucleus and this space where I understand electrons whirl around. But it is finite in its dimension. And they talk about an analogy which shows the amount of space between the nucleus and the space in the atom, as if you conceive of a soccer stadium. Imagine how large that is. Now imagine the soccer ball right in the center point of the soccer stadium. That distance is analogous to the space of the nucleus to the size of the atom. Now, while it is vast vastness of empty space, it's not an empty space of nothing, it's an empty space of consciousness, this consciousness of God, this everything is permeated by, that everything in the universe is 99.99999% empty space, but it's filled with this consciousness. So in the rocks, in the mineral world, there is this life force. And Hariharananda, and they teach that these life forces start to grow, start to expand, and create pressure in that environment. From that, then, they expand and move into the vegetable realm. It's written in the scriptures that there is a law of metempsychosis, which is the transference from one body to the next. This idea of the transmigration of the soul that Sri Aurobindo spoke about. That the soul will travel through 8,400,000 wombs. And we've been on this journey. So from the mineral world, then into the vegetable world. And it's determined that there are 3 million different species of plants. And that the soul experiences all of them. And you think, well, that must take an awful long time. They talk about this journey from rocks to God takes millions and millions of years. And they teach us that we have been on this journey, and not only that, that we carry the memories of all those incarnations. Hard to conceive. Hard to conceive. But you think, we are embodied in matter. Matter, what attributes of matter are time and space? God transcends time and space. God always was, always is, and always will be. So while from our perspective, we sort of go, wow, that's hard to believe. From God's perspective, it's just all this play. God was one and he desired to be many. This is all his creation, and so he's experiencing it, or this consciousness is that he's experiencing it as it's ascending back to itself. So 3 million types of plants, if you can imagine. From the plant world, then we move into the animal world. They say there's 900,000 types of waterborne wombs, fishes, sea creatures. 1,100,000 worm categories of creatures. But it's interesting because in the plant world, the plants are stationary. There's a beautiful poem that that sort of speaks to this transmigration by Paramahamsa Yogananda that says, God, this consciousness, is sleeping in the rocks. Because in the rocks, consciousness is there, but it's completely unconscious. Dreaming in the plants. So in the plants, consciousness is starting to awaken somewhat. Vibrating with power in the animals, and then dreaming of infinite possibilities in human beings. So from the plant world. And then in the plant world, we know that plants respond to being talked to. They respond to music. There's apparently evidence that if one plant is sick, that other plants, well, that there is some kind of a communication system. I mean, all of this speaks to consciousness communicating at some level. From the plant world, then, the plant world, they talk about dreaming. So from unconsciousness to subconsciousness. Into the animal world, then, which is consciousness begins. The consciousness, there's consciousness of perception. The animal creatures can see, they can hear, they can taste, they can touch, they can smell. There's also movement. But the main vehicle of knowledge in the animal world is instinctual. But animals start to evolve. And as they evolve, we can watch, it's very beautiful, is if we look at the spine of most creatures is like this. It's straight. And as it evolves, the animals evolve, the spine starts to straighten. When we see the higher, the more intelligent the creature, the straighter the spine. You think of a monkey can sit sort of like this. A dog will sit with a straight spine. And what is the most intelligent creature on the planet is human beings. And we're bipedal with a straight spine. So we have the worm category. So we have 900,000 waterborne, 1,100,000 worm category. Then we have, I believe it's 1 million birds, categories of birds, and then 2 million categories of animals. I assume that would be reptiles, then moving up into animals. And I haven't checked this, but Hariharananda writes, is that while biologists can't put a fix completely on the number of species there are, apparently these numbers really correlate, which is what was known with modern biology, which is not surprising, because these numbers are coming from the scriptures, from the realized masters, from truth, from God. So, from the animal kingdom, the next step in evolution, while the evolution of consciousness is still going, moves into the human realm, which is us. In the human realm, consciousness has not stopped. Human beings have discrimination. We have self-consciousness. We also have will. We can direct. And we have discrimination, which really separates us. But from that, there is a higher level, and that is super-consciousness. And this is the realm of yoga, to the realm of the God-men. So from the subconsciousness, or from unconsciousness to subconsciousness to consciousness to superconsciousness. Hariharananda writes, from superconsciousness then, in the realm of the yogis, from superconsciousness to cosmic consciousness, from cosmic consciousness to wisdom, a state called nirvikalpa samadhi, which when attained through yogic practices, the practitioner merges then back completely into the absolute. At this point in nirvikalpa samadhi, the yogi stops the heart and stops breathing completely and merges completely back into the one formless absolute Brahman. It's the direct realization that thou art that. That thou art that tatvam brahmasi, I am Brahman. Now those, Hariharananda writes, I find this very beautiful. He says that at that point, he says the yogi, the person, has spiritual experiences through this attainment of nirvikalpa samadhi, through which new aspects of reality reveal themselves. And the world appears as an ocean of light and beauty and bliss, and God is perceived everywhere in everything. So when they're telling us through the scriptures that God is all-pervading, omnipotent, omniscient, this is their direct realization. Just as I think we have from the animal world, human beings, while we are still mammals, there's new aspects of reality that have dawned on us that are not apparent in the animal world. Similarly, in the realm of the superhuman, new aspects of reality have revealed to them that are not yet revealing to us. So this is the journey of from rock to God, which takes millions and millions of years. And all of us are on this journey. An analogy that it's often used is the idea of the ocean and a wave. A wave comes from the ocean, exists for a time, and then merges back into the ocean. And that's essentially what we're taught we have done. We have come from this absolute consciousness through the play of God. We are lost in the play of the material world through this Maya, which has projected the world. And through Maya, Swami Sivananda says it's the mind that is Maya. If you think, the body will go back to the earth. The body comes from the earth. What makes the body? Food. Where does food come from? Food comes from the earth. So the body is, will go back to the earth. The soul is ever pure, ever perfect. It's God. It's just wrapped in this sheath of ignorance. What keeps us from realizing this is the mind. So yoga, the whole point of yoga is the cessation of the mind stuff. This nirvikalpa samadhi, as I said, is where they stop the breathing and stop the heart. At that point, the mind then is completely stilled. There is no more activity in the mind. When that happens, then they consciously, the spiritual seeker then merges back into the infinite. So that's the journey from, it's very nice. Pragyananda says, how he said it, we are waves come from the ocean, but we forget that we're from the ocean because we're busy looking at the other waves. They say that there's two forces that act on human beings. One is centrifugal, which goes out like this, and one is centripetal, which goes back like this. They say it's the same force, but going in different directions. It's very beautiful. The yogis teach that in the womb, the fetus has full awareness of divinity. Pragyananda writes that the fetus is bathing in the light of the soul of God. It knows where it has come from and where it is going. It's actually planning the incarnation. And it's very beautiful. A friend of mine sent me a photograph of a fetus in the womb. I'm not sure how old the fetus was, but you know, it was enough so you could clearly see a baby. And the little hands are like this, and the little head is like this. And I thought, look at that. I mean, in the womb, we have full memory, apparently, of our past lives. It's already determined through the Prarabdha Karma how long we're going to live, how we're going to die, who we're going to live with, what our main objective is in this incarnation is already predetermined. And we remember it in the womb. And Pragyananda writes, in the womb we're saying, oh God, I will remember you. I will not forget you this time. I will remember you. And then we're born. We come out the birth canal, which can't be an easy thing for the baby or the mother. We come out. The senses, we start to breathe. Then all of a sudden the breath starts, the senses open up, and whoosh. There's something they call Vaishnava prana comes in, and the memory is wiped out. For a little while we remember, apparently, and then it's forgotten.
When the yogi ascends into the God state and the heart stops breathing, the heart stops and the breath stops, it's like a little death. Now, the yogi's able to come back, or he can willfully just end his life?
My understanding of it is that when that happens and they come back, most live not much longer than 21 days. Mm-hmm. And then they leave the body, because who wants to stay? Those that achieve this state come back. Why? Because they have a mission for the upliftment of the rest of us.
So they can stay longer if they have a mission?
That's my understanding. So we're born and the incarnation begins. Where to go from here? And we take birth. And then we have the Prarabdha Karma. And the Prarabdha Karma determines how long we will live. Whenever our karma is worked out for this incarnation, then the body will separate, the astral body separates from the causal body, or from the physical body, and that's what we know as death. And then we go to one of the various lokas or heaven.
Would you define the causal body? I don't believe you did that.
The causal body, if I can. There's a three body. This is the definition of Adi Shankaracharya and Tattva Body. He says, that which is beginningless, inexplicable, the cause of the other two bodies, astral and physical, of the nature of ignorance, ignorant of its own true nature, beyond duality, is the causal body. The causal body is a very interesting thing. I'll share with you, to the degree I can, what I know about it. Because it's essentially a body of ignorance. Ignorance doesn't really have any substance. It's the absence of knowledge of something. Like, for example, we are ignorant of computers. Once we learn about computers, the ignorance is gone. So while it doesn't really exist, we know the effect of it when it vanishes. But the causal body, we are told, is also the seat of our unmanifest personality. This karma we accumulate. Action gives rise to a result. The result can either be favorable, something we like, or unfavorable, something we dislike, or neutral. So the karma based on the attachment will have different levels of strength. That creates an impression. That impression is called a samsara. This impression, these are these karmic seeds, and we have these, carry these seeds from countless births. But they also have with it a vasana, and the vasana is the desire. This desire then gives rise to action, which gives rise to a result or an impression, which gives rise to a desire. And it's just a cycle. It goes on like this. But what binds us is our attachment. No attachment, no karma. So before I lose my place here, where was I going? Okay. So now there's this evolution. And as I said, this is the path of yoga. So now to speak of Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga, as I said, is made up of two words, Kriya and Yoga, but it has a very beautiful history. Hariharananda teaches that God brought the mystery of Kriya Yoga with the creation of the universe. This is another sort of thing I'll share with you that I recently read that is quite beautiful. This idea, as I mentioned, of consciousness going from space to air to fire to water to earth is like an expansion out like this. That earth then expands out from the most subtle to the gross. And there are those that say, that use an analogy, that the universes are like the inhalation and exhalation of the absolute. The exhalation and then the inhalation back in. That this universe goes out, that it will exist for a time, and then it will come back. And we know that the universe is expanding. And physicists tell us that it will expand till at some point it will stop, and then it will come back in. And like a black hole, what is a black hole? It's a infinitely small, concentrated phenomena, and that there are countless universes. Hariharananda teaches, when asked, are there other planets? And he was told yes, and there was one, he says, and he mentions a bit about, you know, that there are other planets with other beings, other human beings there. And he's, but it's sort of interesting, he says, one is very beautiful. This is in his book, Divine Quest, but then he says, I will not say more. And then they stop. I don't know why, but for some reason, there's a general tendency that they will not talk about that. I think it's because it's something that fascinates us so that it fixates our mind on it, and that's not practical. What is practical is for us to realize our own divinity, and from that, then there's no more play of universes. Because universe is matter, and the whole point is to transcend matter and merge back into that which we are, our essential nature. So Kriya Yoga came with the God brought this mystery, he said, the mystery and power of Kriya Yoga with the creation of the universe. He says that he writes about in the Bhagavad Gita that, if I remember correctly, Vivaswan taught it to Manu, his son, who taught it to Ikshvaku. This is the solar lineage in Hindu mythology, the royal sages. From them, it was then passed down through a time, and then it disappeared. He brought it back through to Arjuna and the Pandavas, and again, it was practiced but disappeared. The problem with it was that while it gave God realization, it was very austere, very intense, and that only people, the royal sages, people that had the time, that were supported, could do the practice, or the ascetics who could go off into the woods or into a cave. But for the householder, it wasn't practical or possible. Then in 18...
Too busy.
Exactly. In 1861, Babaji Maharaj reintroduced Kriya Yoga for the modern age. And he wanted it two specific things. He wanted it to have a scientific orientation, and he wanted to make it available for the householder, people like us with families, with a job. So Babaji taught the technique to Lahiri Mahasaya. Lahiri Mahasaya was a householder, a great, great, highly realized yogis that the monastics hold in high esteem because of the depth and height of his spiritual attainment that he was able to attain while being a family man. He worked for the British Works, Department of British Works or something, for the Indian government for 35 years. He had 5 children. He had a wife. He had the problems that all of us had. He apparently had money problems, and so he would teach at night to support the income. It's kind of a beautiful story of that sort of speaks to the nature of the family. He's married, so he has a wife. Husband and wives, as any of us that have been married know, have a certain dynamic. And the wife was sort of going, you know, you're a holy man, very nice, but you're not my guru, you're my husband. One night, this is recorded in an autobiography of a yogi, she woke up and saw him. He was meditating and levitating off the floor in a lotus position. At that part, there was no question about who was her master. But very beautiful. So he used, Babaji used Lahiri Baba as his principal disciple to spread the message of Kriya Yoga in this age. Lahiri Mahasaya had many disciples, two of whom are here, Sri Yukteswar and Sanyal Mahasaya. Sanyal Mahasaya was his youngest disciple. And Sri Yukteswar, actually, as we see him here, is a monastic, but he attained realization. He was a householder. He was married. He had a daughter. His wife died. He became a widower. And then when his daughter was well placed, he took sannyas.
Bhupendranath Sanyal was an educator. I believe he worked with Rabindranath Tagore. They had worked together and I believe started a university or in some capacity. But he lived in Puri. Now the reason we show this lineage like this is because all of these masters are connected with Hariharananda, who is the founder of our mission. Kriya Yoga is a tree with a lot of branches. This is our particular lineage or branches.
Yes.
So, Sri Yukteswar and then had many disciples, three of whom are here. Yogananda, Satyananda, and Hariharananda. Hariharananda, in 1932, took first Kriya from Sri Yukteswar. In 35-36, when Yoganandaji came back to India, Sri Yukteswar sent Hariharananda to see Yogananda in Calcutta. Yoganandaji received Hariharananda and asked him, "What do you want?" Hariharananda basically said, "I want, my heart's desire is to realize God, and I would like to see, if possible, to see you enter the state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, this state of merging into the, back into God." Yogananda said, "If I show you this, what are you prepared to do? How much are you prepared to practice?" Hariharananda said, "It's not a question of practice. I have made a vow that I will dedicate my whole life, whatever it takes, toward this end." So Yogananda, through his intuitive power of a realized master, could see Hariharananda's destiny. And so he blessed him, went into Nirvikalpa Samadhi for him. Afterwards, he gave Hariharananda second Kriya. So that's why he's part of our lineage. We're not affiliated with SRF, Self-Realization Fellowship, which was Yoganandaji's mission in the West. But why we have Yoganandaji here is he is our Param Guru, our Guru's Guru. Yogananda went back to America. Sri Yukteswar had his Maha Samadhi. Swami Satyananda then became the head of Karar Ashram and the mission of Sri Yukteswar in India. In 1938, it had been Sri Yukteswar's wish that Hariharananda would come into the ashram and be a monastic and ultimately take over. Hariharananda, a profound human being. His father was a very orthodox Brahmin who would do pujas every day, long pujas. Hariharananda, at the age of two and a half now, we all know what a 2.5-year-old child is like, would sit with his father for hours while he did these pujas. By the age of 4, Hariharananda had memorized all the mantras. The age of 4. He told me that by the age of 8, he had memorized all the Upanishads. I suppose the 10, the principal ones. I don't know. I can't imagine he memorized 108, but who knows. Anyway, where was I? Okay. So then, in 1938, Hariharananda, he was a technocrat, a textile engineer, which at the time, in the 30s, was a booming field in India, I would assume, probably similar to what computer engineering perhaps was in the 90s or may still be now. Anyway, in 1938, he determined that he wanted to enter the ashram. Hariharananda's father was also a very good astrologer and could read palms. And when Hariharananda was born, he was the 10th of 11 children. The family was, I don't know if you'd call it an aristocratic family, but he was born into a very spiritual, affluent family. His father cast his chart, and he could see in his chart that Hariharananda was destined to be a great soul. So in 1938, Hariharananda entered Karar Ashram, and he began a period of intense sadhana for 11 and a half years of silence and seclusion, where he went into a small room, and I had the great good fortune this past Christmas to get to go to India. I got to go to Karar Ashram, and I got to see the room that Hari Harananda was in. And it's a room about this wide by about here to here, a small room. He went in there. He didn't even take any books, any scriptures. He said, I came to meditate. And he went into this room in silence and seclusion for 11 and a half years. And in 1948, he achieved Nirvikalpa Samadhi, this deathless state and this state of realization. So, second kriya.
Are you saying no food or water?
Oh, he'd drink no. Oh, he'd have food or water, sure, okay. But no books.
Okay.
You know, just I mean, it's one thing if you to sit. You know, he what he did do is though is there's in the ashram, there's these beautiful walks, brick walks, that are in the ashram, and Hari Harananda did that. Apparently, every day he would come out for an hour and lay 40 bricks or whatever it was. Because the body can't just sit all the time. It will atrophy. It needed some exercise. Second kriya, Yogananda. Third kriya from Swami Satyananda. Fourth, fifth, and sixth kriya. There's six levels of kriya from Bhupendranath Sanyal. In 1974, Hari Harananda, he says at the... basically, at the insistence of Babaji, Lahiri Baba, and Sri Yukteswar, came to the West. Yoganandaji had came to the West in 1920. America was a very different place in 1920 than in the 70s. And so he reintroduced his mission of Kriya Yoga. In 2002, Hari Harananda left his body, had his Mahasamadhi. But, as he said, is the hallowed tradition of Kriya Yoga, a master does not leave unless they have a realized master, that through whom they can infuse their spiritual power to carry on the lineage. And in our mission, this is Paramahamsa Pragyananda.
Who is the one there? Yeah.
Hari Harananda.
He's gone?
Yes.
So the one that went to speak somewhere else tonight...
That's Swami Atmavidyananda.
And is there a picture of him?
Somewhere.
Right there.
Oh, there, right there. Okay. He looks different now. His beard is a lot longer.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he has nothing left here.
Who's this one here?
Which one?
The first one.
Swami Pragyananda. He's the current head of our lineage now.
And where are you situated?
Okay, well, it's a worldwide organization. Ground Zero... of the organization would be Baligai, which is 13 miles outside Puri, which is in
India.
As I said, is in India. Okay, that's where Karar Ashram is. That's where. So this was the ashram Sri Yukteswar started. Then Swami Satyananda, after he left, he was the president. In 1972, Hari Harananda became president of Karar Ashram.
Okay.
Hari Harananda left in 74 and started the mission. In the West, we have an ashram in Homestead, Florida, which is 45 minutes south of Miami International Airport.
And is that where you come from?
No, I come from, I live in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
And then we have centers, like this center we have here, which is... kind of grassroots center, volunteer centers. We have 36 of them in the United States. We have ashrams in Europe, two ashrams in Europe. We have, I don't know quite how many in India, and we have centers in South America and in New Zealand and Australia.
Where is he?
Tonight he is in San Jose.
And but where does he live?
He lives, his residence is in Homestead.
In India?
No, Homestead, Florida.
Florida.
He lives in America.
Okay.
Anyway, to continue, so that's the history. So, Kriya Yoga, to talk a little bit about Kriya Yoga, Hari Harananda writes that Kriya Yoga is the essence of all yogas. That Kriya Yoga, while all the yogas, in one sense,
have evolved from certain aspects of Kriya Yoga. The modern Kriya Yoga that we practice now takes just the essence of certain yogas. Hatha Yoga, which is for the body, Raja Yoga for the mind, Jnana Yoga for the intellect. Oh, I forgot the chakra chart. Oh, well. So what is the practice of Kriya Yoga? Kriya Yoga, we concentrate, we use concentration, a few spinal stretching exercises, and we work extensively with the breath. What do we concentrate on? The soul, Kriya Yoga teaches, manifests in the body through three qualities: divine sound, divine vibration, and divine light. This is called divine energy. We take this energy and we focus, concentrate this energy in the seven chakras or energy centers in the body. There are five in the spine and two in the brain. The top of the head is the soul, is the fontanelle. 3 inches in from the center of the eyebrow is the soul center. Directly behind the neck, where the head bends, in the spine, in the astral body, is the throat center, Vishuddha chakra. This is the center of space. In the heart center, we have the air center, fire center directly below the navel, water center directly below the genitals, and earth center directly at the base of the spine. We concentrate this energy, and we focus it and move it, rotating it around the spine, which magnetizes the spine, which greatly speeds up our spiritual evolution. As I said, we talked about this 400,000 human births. That's a lot of births. How can we speed up this evolution? What the yogis found is that if this is through the power of their meditation, that if a person could live 1,000,000 years without disease or decrepitude, then by solar or chemical power, they could absorb the knowledge of the universe. In other words, they could attain realization. What they also found is that by these yogic techniques, they could do something they call magnetize the spine. And what, as we know what magnetism does, it pulls into it this energy. We have this spiritual energy is like fire in wood. It permeates the whole body, like cream in milk. And through magnetizing the spine, we pull this energy back in into the spine, move it up the spine through these nadi channels, through the chakras, eventually into the fontanelle, the kingdom of heaven. And through concentration and focusing this energy, Hariharananda writes, this will be the energy that will be the knock that will open the floodgates of light that will ultimately lead to this evolution or this realization of divinity.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So we...
is it also, as it's ascending, is there something that's descending down? You know how Newton's law of attraction and where there's equal and opposite...
The problem is the energy is going out like this all the time. We want to pull the energy back into its source. And then through that and through concentration, that will be the knock, Hariharananda writes, that will eventually open the gate. Floodgates of light is how he puts it.
So it comes right up and goes up through the fontanelle?
Well, into the atom point. Into the atom point is what they tell us. The God is hiding. This is the kingdom of heaven. The God is hiding in the atom point. That this point can be found, and ultimately through the grace of the master can be opened, and then realization is attained. These masters, like Yogananda, we talked about the tremendous spiritual achievement it is to realize this divinity, to go into nirvikalpa samadhi. These are so highly realized,
Hariharananda, Sri Yukteswar, Yogananda,
that they could go into Nirvikalpa Samadhi at will. The Yogananda say, basically, through this power of the Kriya, Yogananda, when Hariharananda sit him, he sat, took long, slow, deep breaths, two or three, and then merged totally into this super consciousness state. So there's that. Then we do a few spinal exercises, which opens up these nadi channels in the spine through which this divine energy then moves through, and then breath. Hariharananda has written that Kriya Yoga is the science of breath. Mind controls the senses and breath controls the mind. So by controlling the breath, we control the mind, which is why this whole point of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, they say there's 50 types of breath, 50 different breaths. 49 give us different types of dispositions. And there's one breath. They call it the subtle breath, the feeble breath. That it's not a technique, it's an achievement. When you can attain that breath, then that's the breath that will lead to realization. So breath control is self-control. Breath mastery is self-mastery. Breathlessness stage is deathlessness stage. That the breath, they say that our life is correlated. Some say that I've read that the amount of breaths that we will take will determine our lifespan as well. And you can see that different animals, their rate of lifespan is correlated with the number of breaths. For example, a rabbit, they teach, breathes 38 times a minute and lives 8 years. A dog breathes 28 times a minute and lives about 16 to 18 years on average. Human beings, 15 times a minute and can live up to 100 years. An elephant, 10 times a minute and can live 120 years. Tortoise and crocodiles, 4 breaths a minute and can live over 150 years. Wow. So there's a correlation between breath and lifespan.
How about now with the air not being so good, especially in the cities? How does that affect the meditation with the lead in the air and all the horrible stuff going on in the air?
Well, I don't really have an answer for that. What I do know is that the amount of breath that you take really has a difference. Restless breath creates restless mind. You'll notice when you're angry or when your passion and anger, the breath becomes very long. You'll notice when you're calm and concentrated doing, like say you're absorbed in a good book or something, if you can notice, you'll find that your breath is very slow and very rhythmic, and the mind is very calm. So with Kriya Yoga, we work with, as I said, concentration on this divine energy. We work with a few spinal stretching exercises that have many benefits, both physically and mentally. We have this magnetization greatly speeds up our evolution. Harhana would write, you can either travel by bullock cart or you can travel by jet plane. And he says, Kriya Yoga is a jet plane to realization, that it is possible and has been proven by these masters that realization can be attained in one lifetime.
Wow.
And he says it's a scientific technique. Now, a scientific technique, the scientific method means is, if I do something here this way, I'll get this result. If I do the same thing in another place, I'll get the same result. And that's what has been proven in this practice. So, if we were interested in Kriya Yoga, how would we begin? What happens, you need to be initiated. There's an initiation process through which you're initiated into this lineage. There's a ceremony where there's the chanting of special Sanskrit Vedic mantras that at the time of initiation purify the chakras and purify the senses. And then this latent spiritual energy, these triple divine qualities, is really, it's already there, but we say it's either infused or awakened. After the initiation, that part, it's also taught directly, teacher to the initiate. There's certain aspects of Kriya Yoga that it's not written down. You can't find it in a book, and there are certain aspects of it that of the initiation process that could not be delivered through a CD or a DVD. It's done directly through this lineage, directly through teacher to initiate. This keeps the integrity of the practice and the integrity of the initiation. After that, there's a symbolic fire ceremony that continues the purification. Then that's it for the initiation ceremony. Then we teach you the technique. The techniques, there are the meditation practice. There's an 8-step technique. While it's not overly complicated, there is a lot of new information. And so you basically have to commit to 3 meditations. Number one, you need to learn it. We need to know that you're comfortable with it and that you're doing it carefully. For initiation, there is an offering. You bring an offering of 5 fruits. Fruits represent the fruits of our labors. 5 flowers, which represent the 5 senses, and a cash donation of $150, which represents the labor of the body, which then they teach is gives mitigation on the 3 levels of the causal, astral, and physical body.
That money, does that money go to the ashrams?
Yes.
To help people, or just the keeping of the flame?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
There's organizational costs.
Okay.
Yeah, it goes to Kriya Yoga Institute.
Will you be doing the initiation?
Swamiji and I will be tomorrow.
How do you spell?
He'll be, yeah.
How do you spell his name?
Swami, S-W-A...
No, his
G. Atma Vidyananda. A-T-M-A-V-I-D-Y-A-N...
Atma...
N-D-A? Atma Vidyananda.
Vidyananda.
It's on the poster there.
Okay, thank you.
So with
Atma,
that...
Isn't Atma the soul?
Yes.
Okay.
And vidya is knowledge. So it's and ananda is bliss. So it's bliss in the knowledge of the soul.
Ooh.
What we have is avidyananda.
Thank you.
Which is ignorance of the soul.
Uh-oh.
But it's an interesting, just you spoke of the causal body. This causal body is a body of ignorance. Now it pervades the other 2 bodies. But we actually, in deep sleep, we go into this state where we stop the mind every night. So we experience realization, death, actually,
yes,
every night. But we don't remember it. The
conscious
difference between us and them is we go into this state of ignorance. But we know that we still exist because we wake up in the morning and we can say we slept well. We don't know why, we don't remember, but we do know. And all you need to do is not sleep well, you know there's a problem. Whereas with these masters, they attain that state, but consciously. So with that, we are running out. Is there there's any questions that I could answer?
Well, I'd just like to ask you something.
Sure. If I can answer, I will.
I was fortunate enough to visit an ashram in Hawaii devoted to Sri Anandamayi Ma. And it's my understanding that she was a practitioner of Kriya Yoga.
Anandamayi Ma?
Uh-huh.
Now that I can't speak to, but what I can speak to is that she did have a relationship with Yogananda, and she definitely had, I know, a close relationship with Hariharananda. As to whether she practiced Kriya Yoga or not, I can't speak to that. But she was a great realized soul, and she would, there's a story of her coming to Karar Ashram and with her disciples and going. At that time, he was Brahmachari Rabinarayan. And she comes in and goes, Robin, Robin, where is my Robin Araya? And there was the monk who was in charge of the ashram was apparently a man who had was rich in potential in improving his anger issues. Anyway, he got annoyed with, who is this woman coming in the ashram and screaming? Hariharananda came out of his room where he was meditating and said, you know, Swamiji, this is, you know, Anandamai Ma, to which, you know, oh my God, what have I done here? And he bowed and she allowed him to bow at her feet, but he was, that's sort of a nice story where he's sort of protecting him and he doesn't know who this, you know, woman is. But yes, yeah, so there is definitely a relationship there. Any other questions?
I think this is a perfect time for you all to come around. I noticed you had an itinerary around the nation.
Yes.
So this is the best time.
Well, this as I said, the mission was started in 1974, and it's started with a trickle and has become a river. And
thank you for coming.
Thank you. Please close the eyes. I bow to God. I bow to my Guruji, Paramahamsa Pragyananda. I bow to my Gurudev, Paramahamsa Hariharananda. I bow to the lineage of Kriya Yoga Masters. I bow to the living power of God within you all. With deepest love, I humbly bow. Om. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm sure you were going to finish.
No, that's okay. That's a good finish, too.
Do you recommend any books on Kriya Yoga? Do you know about this one?